Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. The government shutdown is finally over. On Wednesday night, the House and Senate voted to end the shutdown and raise the debt ceiling, just in time to prevent the U.S. from defaulting on our national debt by the deadline. President Obama later signed the measure into law. It will fund the government only until January 15th, however, and raise the debt ceiling just until February 17th, when the whole process will start over. The Senate vote was overwhelming, with both California Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein voting for the measure. On the House side, 285 voted yes and 144 voted no. Among our local legislators, Republican Darrell Issa joined with Democrats Susan Davis, Juan Vargas, and Scott Peters to vote in favor of the continuing resolution to fund the government and end the shutdown. Among our local delegation, only Republican Duncan Hunter was unwilling to prevent a default on America's debts, casting a no vote. The shutdown began after House Republicans sought to defund the Affordable Health Care Act, known as Obamacare. In the end, the Republicans were not able to get what they wanted, and the Affordable Health Care Act continues to roll out. The Republicans had argued that they wanted to reduce spending, but instead, the shutdown itself cost our government $24 billion. That estimate is according to Standard & Poor's, the financial services company that issues ratings on the financial stability of the U.S. government. The costs of the shutdown include roughly $3.1 billion in lost government services, $152 million a day lost in travel spending, $76 million a day lost because of national parks being shut down, and $217 million every day in lost federal and contractor wages in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area alone. Now that the shutdown is over, the president has urged Congress to get to work on other major legislation that has been sidelined, including the Farm Bill and immigration reforms. Meanwhile, at our state capital in Sacramento, Governor Jerry Brown has signed into law a package of bills designed to protect immigrant workers from abuse. The new laws prevent employers from threatening workers with deportation if the worker has reported abusive workplace conditions. It also protects workers from employers who don't pay wages owed and then seek to evade paying up by having workers deported. An employer who retaliates with deportation threats against a worker who speaks out about unsafe or unfair working conditions may now be charged with criminal extortion. The governor vetoed a measure, however, that would have allowed legal immigrants who are not citizens to serve on juries.
This is Rebecca Williamson running up the wildest jobs in East County. Now here's the buzz.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and our topic today is really for the birds.
We are here with Amanda Plant and Brooke Durham from SoCal Parrot. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Now, SoCal Parrot is a parrot rescue society. They take care of those wild parrots that we're seeing more and more around East County. So they're going to tell us about their work and also a very special event coming up. Let's start with the event. When and where is it?
It is next Sunday, so not this coming Sunday, but the following, October 27th, and it's located out at our sanctuary and garden in Hamul. And what you can see there are not only lots of wild parrots, but we also have our parrot ambassadors that you can interact a little closely with. We're going to have fun activities for the kids. They're going to learn about all kinds of biological features that the parrots have, and we also have some fun activities for the adults. We're going to have the game playing on a big screen. You can also bring your own picnic lunch, because it's called our Picnic with the Parrots, and you can also just purchase a lunch there on site at the facility. But the main focus is going to be learning about our organization, what we do, being able to interact with the wild parrots, really enjoy the property and the sanctuary and garden that we have out there.
Well, sounds very exciting, and I understand there's also a petting zoo and a harvest theme and a pumpkin patch in addition to lots and lots of parrots.
Absolutely.
So the event, again, is October 27th from 11 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon out at Hamul. Now, tell us how the organization got started.
We got started 7 years ago. We were doing work rehabilitating wild parrots, and we discovered there was a niche where lots of other organizations maybe weren't out there doing what we do to support the wild parrots. And just this past April, we became an official nonprofit and really want to spread the word and awareness that there is an organization out there that can care for injured, orphaned, wild, abandoned parrots out there.
How many wild parrots are there, do you think, in San Diego County?
We think there are probably in the thousands. Definitely, which is great, especially considering that some of the species we have here, there are probably more of left in Southern California in the wild than there are in their native habitat in Mexico.
Wow, because of destruction of rainforest.
Right,
and so
habitat
forth.
Destruction, human encroachment, and also poaching is a big problem down in Mexico with these parrots because they're seen as a pet, black market pet.
Now, I understand that there's some question about whether some of these parrots should be considered native species or not. How close were their original habitats to the San Diego area?
So the native habitats of these birds range from Mexico to Central and South America. Essentially, they could have migrated across the border. They could have been released as pets. But the reality of the fact is no one has really came and shown documented proof that the parrots are encroaching on the native habitat. So they're very close by, and they are not really native species to San Diego, but they're here and they're thriving. We provide all the local vegetation and ornamental plants that they need to survive. So they've found San Diego and East County to be a home of theirs.
How many species of parrots are there here? And can you tell us a little bit about what they look like, what they sound like, how people will know if they've got them in their area?
That's a great question. So if you see a green bird, most likely it very well could be a wild parrot. And granted, there are some domestic pets that are released, and you know those certainly could be a white bird, like a cockatoo or a cockatiel, smaller birds. But if you see a green bird and it's squawking and there are lots of them together and they're making lots of noise and look like they're having a good bird party, then you'll know you've seen some wild parrots. And there are 13 species of wild parrots that we know of throughout Southern California.
Wow.
Mainly in East County and throughout San Diego, the species that you'll see are Amazons, and you will see some conures as well.
Now, Amazons, are those red-headed birds?
The Amazons do have a little bit of red on their forehead. The conure ones are often called the Mexican redheads or red mask conures.
Right, I had a flock of 50 of them hanging around my house in the La Mesa area for a while.
Yes.
Every morning it was like waking up in the rainforest.
La Mesa is known for its conure flocks.
Yeah, they love our oranges.
Yeah, those are the fruit. Two species that we see there are the cherry-headed conure or the red mask. Parakeet is what it's often referred to in biological literature, and then also the mitrid conure. And they look very similar, and they actually can interbreed, so we do see hybridization of those two species.
Wow.
And really, they look almost identical except for the weight, the size difference. There's a 50-gram size difference.
And then there's a lilac-headed variety, lilac-crowned variety, I understand?
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the most popular species that you'll find in San Diego County.
And that's an Amazon,
right.
Lilac-crowned Amazon. And then there's also a red-crowned or green-cheeked Amazon.
What can people do if they want to help these parrots survive in the wild?
So we get that question a lot. Folks see the birds and they're kind of wondering. Maybe they see a solo green bird and they're not quite sure what to do. We actually get calls pretty frequently. I see a bird in a tree and I'm not sure what to do. Well, first question, is it green? And so then we know maybe if it's domestic versus wild. And the next question we might ask is, well, does it appear hurt, injured, sick? Like it needs help. Lots of times people see a solo bird and they're not quite sure, like, oh, maybe I should help it because it's by itself, or maybe it's on the ground and I'm not sure what to do. So oftentimes there's a really precious age of a bird called a fledgling age, and that applies to all birds, really, wild ones that learn to fly on their own. And if you see a bird on the ground, as long as it's not in real grave danger and it doesn't appear to be overly sick or emaciated or, you know, needs help, then maybe leave it alone and watch. See if mom and dad are around. Because when a bird is a fledgling age and learning to fly, it really needs that tender time to learn to get up and go and fly on its own. And so those are some common things and questions that we get that we really want mm-hmm. folks to be aware of and knowledgeable about. And so it's something that we're working on. Every time we do an outreach event, we really want to deliver the message of what to do when you see a wild bird and how you should help them then.
Are there foods, plants that one can put in your yard that will attract these birds or help them to thrive?
There are certainly fruiting and ornamental plants that they prefer. And in areas where those plants have matured, along the Embarcadero, the coral trees and things like that, those are definitely big flashing neon signs to the birds that there's nectar and fresh petals to chew on here.
But, smorgasbord time.
Yeah, right, buffet. But again, that's typically in the mature sections of town. And so the trees that they tend to prefer are 30, 40, 50-year-old trees that have been in the ground for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily encourage putting out food for the parrots. We want the parrots to stay afraid of humans because right. even though you may be nice and you might like them and you're not going to do anything but take a picture of them, watch them where they are, we don't encourage anyone to feed them. Just let them do their thing. Stay out of the way.
Now, what are some of the injuries or illnesses that you see come in with these exotic birds?
So we do see a lot of interaction with humans that causes injury. So maybe a car strike or sometimes even electrocutions occur, attacks of domestic dogs on the birds when they are at that fledgling age. So really human-animal interaction causes problems and issues with all wild animals. So parrots are really generally no exception.
So if you do find an injured bird, what is the number that they should call? How do people reach you?
They can reach us by dialing 1-855-REP-4WLD. And it's our main line for anything and everything. If you have a parrot emergency, if you want information about the organization, if you would like us to come talk at your school or your civic group, you can call that line and you'll be directed to the right person and who to speak with.
So that number again is 855-4WLD. REP4WILD. So
correct.
858-REP4WILD. And the website is www.socalparrot.org. We should clarify also that your organization works only with wild parrots. If people have a domestic parrot that needs a rescue situation, is there someone you can suggest they contact?
Yeah, we're building our partnership with a couple other domestic parrot organizations, and one locally here in San Diego County is PEAC, or PEACE. It's the Parrot Education and Adoption Center, and they do deal with domestic parrots. So we certainly would like to defer folks to that organization if they have a domestic parrot issue.
How many parrots do you currently have at the rescue facility, and what happens to these rehabbed parrots?
The number fluctuates daily, so I would say we're around 30 parrots that are ready to be released right now. Mm-hmm. We're just working on our release protocol for those.
So you have a whole flock?
So we have a flock in a very, very large pre-release flight enclosure, which is something that you can definitely come out and see on our picnic with the parrot days. That facility is normally closed so that we limit the interaction of the parrots with humans.
Right.
But we do, on a special occasion, let everybody kind of walk by quietly and see what they're doing.
And where do they go when they're ready to be released? What do you do with them?
Well, that's a good question. Right now, we're the only organization in the world that is rehabilitating wild parrots in a urban environment for
Very
release. So that's the challenge that we're up against right now. And we're working with some other organizations that know a lot about parrots and other organizations that know a lot about wildlife. We're trying to come up with the best scenario for teaching the birds to know what food sources and what's safe and things like that.
Interesting.
Fortunately, they're very social, so they tend to, if you have a couple of mature birds that have been in the wild and maybe had a brief injury and then we give them over to the flock, they tend to teach the youngsters what they can and can't do and what to be afraid of.
Well, that's very good news.
Yeah.
And the event again coming up is Picnic with the Parrots.
October 27th, 11 to 4. We're encouraging everyone to come out and see the great work that we're doing. If you're an animal enthusiast, a parrot lover, or just a person that wants a fun fall activity to do with your family, we invite folks to come out and look at our organization and see what we're doing. That's SoCalParrot.org. And you can also like us on Facebook as well. And we also have a wonderful Instagram.
I want to thank you for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show. And again, people can learn more about you at SoCalParrot.org.
Thank you so much.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The Living Coast Nature Preserve in Chula Vista is facing a financial crisis and may be forced to close its doors. East County Magazine correspondent Jake Christie visited the center on October 10th and conducted interviews with Sherry Langston and Ben Vallejos.
This is Jake Christie with Sherry Langston. How long has the organization been around?
So the Living Coast is originally owned by the city of Chula Vista and opened in 1987. So we're coming up on 26 years. The city of Chula Vista was going to have to close it back in 2009 during their budget crisis, which we all understand when it was taken over by the current management here at the Living Coast Discovery Center. We've been able to keep it open for 4 additional years for the community, but we're still looking for funding options in order to keep our doors open to continue to our bright future.
And how long have you been with the organization?
I'm coming up on 2 years.
What are the funding problems with the organization right now?
So one of the biggest challenges that we have is that when we took it over back in 2009, it was transitioned from a city-funded organization to a private 501c3. And many other organizations similar to us, like, you know, some of the larger guys like the zoo and even Birch Aquarium, they've had decades to build up their funding base, to build up their donations, to build up their members, to build up their funders and their grant writing process. So in the last 4 years, we've developed new programming, definitely, you know, educational programming, so that we can expand our grant funding criteria to fill in that gap, fill in the operating funding. It just takes time. And we've run out of time just for this short period. We're needing about $200,000 to breach over and actually help us move into the new year, where we have about $750,000 worth of pending grants that we've applied for that we're just waiting on to come through for these education programs that we now do. And that's really why we're in a crisis right now, that we need to cover, and we really can't, as being good community members, we can't just ignore that and continue operations as usual. We have to start making those hard decisions that if funding doesn't come through, if we're not able to meet to cover that gap of $200,000 for this year, then unfortunately we're going to have to start, you know, moving forward with the closing plan.
Have you held any fundraisers or anything like that?
Yeah, we fundraise on a regular basis. A lot comes through our members and our donor bases. We've had the food and wine event back in August, which is a really great fundraiser, but more from a PR and awareness standpoint. The bigger the fundraisers are, the more costs are associated with it. You know, the more people you have in, the more chairs you have to rent and cater to and things of that nature. So it was wonderful, beautiful event for public awareness and for PR and to really get people involved here. But from a financial standpoint, though it did provide a good amount of cash flow during a critical time for us, it was not designed to be a long-term solution.
Now, what sort of animals, for those people who've never been down to the address of the organization is?
So we're at 1000 Gunpowder Point Drive, that's in Chula Vista. It's right off the E Street exit from the 5. Mm-hmm. And we focus on native animals here. So that's one of the things that makes us really different from other organizations similar in San Diego region, is we focus on the animals that are native to San Diego and Southern California that you see right in your backyard. We feel that it's important that people can get up and close and personal and make that connection with those animals that are literally living with us here in San Diego. So that way they can be inspired and take some actions in their day-to-day lives and, you know, in regards to conservation and wildlife awareness and just make some changes to help with them in the wild.
So if the money doesn't come through, when will things start closing down?
So October 28th is our deadline for getting in the $200,000. We're very thankful that we've been able to develop a staged closing plan. So if it's not met at if it's not met on October 28th, we will close to the public, which will help us save on quite a bit of expenses there. And we'll have to begin consolidating at that time. The animals is the big question. Well, what's going to happen to the animals? We've been working really hard and talking to a lot of different community partners of ours, as well as some other institutional organizations throughout the United States, and finding, you know, good long-term homes for these animals who we had expected to keep here for, you know, the rest of their lives. So October 28th is the deadline to decide if we have to move forward with the stage closing plan. If it doesn't come in, then we have to start again laying off staff and consolidating our resources. And then by the middle of November, we'll have to start working on the permitting process of transporting the animals. So by the middle of November is really a cutoff point in regards of it being irreversible.
So if you did get the money by November, then you would start up again?
We would have to take some time off away, you know, still be closed to the public for some time so that way we could change course and work on the recovery plan, which is what we've been working on now, is a recovery plan specifically to bring in the funding that we need so that way we can move forward with progress and get to our sustainability level. We did the strategic plan in back this summer, which included, you know, a lot of different members from the community as well, you know, San Diego Tourism Authority, the Zoo, Maritime Museum, SeaWorld, and then some, you know, different community partners, the port and the city of Chula Vista, to decide how we can be sustainable and what we need to get the community what is asked for so that we can be sustainable in the future. So we have this great plan that, you know, we had started to make really great progress on to be completely sustainable and not run into budget crisis, you know, such as we are right now. That plan was given to us and approved by our board on August 22nd. So we're looking at a month or so where we've had opportunities to actually really start moving forward on that. And then some funding that we were expecting wasn't able to come through in time, and that's where we are in this crisis now.
I see. You said that your chairman was in talks with somebody else to provide the funds?
We've been getting a lot of interest from private donors and different parties. They're all mostly anonymous, and we are talking to a few about potentially getting a matching donor program coming up, but that's, you know, we really can't count on anything until it's actually on the table. So there are hopes for that. We've got a couple of different larger organizations that are contacting us that we're talking to about membership programs for them, you know, corporate memberships, as well as continuing to build and develop our STEM education programs here. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of prospects. We have a lot of people that are interested in coming to us, and that's what we've been doing for the last 2 weeks of running around like crazy, just talking to people and really getting the interest up and giving them the information that they need to make a decision. We're hoping to have a couple of decisions by the end of this week, but again, it's one of those you can't quite count on it. You can't count your chickens before they hatch.
That's true.
Yeah. So
how much media interest have you gotten about this story?
Quite a bit. Almost all of the local TV stations have come out for interviews on site or has had us, you know, go to them, to their studios, as well as we're going to be on all of the Clear Channel public radio stations for a 30-minute Community Cares segment. So, I mean, we've gotten really good positive media coverage. We really appreciate everything that they're doing to help us out in this time because we love them as much as they love us, you know, a bit in the print as well. So we're very thankful for those partners and hope that they continue to support us in this time that we have.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Ben Vallejos. I'm the Chief Operating Officer.
And how long have you been the Chief Operating Officer?
I've been the Chief Operating Officer for going on 4 years now.
Do you feel that this can be saved?
Absolutely. We are working hard to do everything we can in the next 3 weeks to reach our recovery goal. We have met with the San Diego Foundation, the Port of San Diego, City of Chula Vista, UTC Aerostructures, and many others to help us. We have commitments already from SDG&E for $25,000, couple private foundations for $10,000 and just walk-up donations for over $18,000. So absolutely, and that's only been 7 days from the day that we announced our plan.
East County Magazine has won more than 50 major journalism awards with reporting that's making a positive difference in our region. The East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org. East County Magazine has won more than 50 major journalism awards with reporting that's making a positive difference in our region. The East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org. You can also visit eastcountymagazine.org to get involved, volunteer, and support our independent community news reporting for our region.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The 4th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate and Barbecue Festival will take place on Sunday, October 20th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Troy Street between Bancroft Avenue and Central Avenue. Initiated by the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce and Cali Comfort Restaurant, the goal of the festival is to raise money for youth sports programs in Spring Valley. Organizers hope to have 30 amateur barbecue teams participating in this year's competition. The amateur teams will be competing in five categories: tri-tip, pork ribs, chicken, best decorated tailgate team, and more. The event also features games, activities, and live music in addition to barbecue tastings. The Phoenix rises for the seventh year at the Tournament of the Phoenix and Festival of History in Poway from October 18th through the 20th at the Poway Rodeo Grounds from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. The preview day is Friday, October 18th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Knights in shining armor astride gorgeous chargers, the crack of shattered lances, the flash of swords, live music, food, and fun return to Poway, October 18th through 20th at the Tournament of the Phoenix. Jousting knights from the United States, Poland, New Zealand, and the Netherlands compete in a six-event competition. The audience can also explore hands-on history at its best as the Festival of History presents Rome to the Renaissance. There will also be various games, crafts, activities, skill contests, and the opportunity to meet the knights at the Knights Camp. Artisan crafts booths, delicious food, and live music will round out the event. The Alpine Firefighters will be holding their 20th annual open house on Saturday, October 19th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tavern Road in Alpine. A fun day for the whole family, the open house includes close-ups with Smokey the Bear, McGruff the Crime Dog, Fire Canine Pyro, and Sparky the Fire Dog. The kids can enjoy face painting, balloons, and a snake display. Child ID and fingerprinting will be available, courtesy of the Kiwanis Club. There will also be food, fire displays, free gifts, and raffles. The East County Live Well Expo and Community Safety Fair is a two-day event celebrating healthy living for all lifestyles. The expo is presented by the California Health Network, Meals for Hunger, and the Santee Fire Department. It will be held on Friday, October 18th, from 3 to 8 p.m., and Saturday, October 19th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Sunrise Community Church on North Magnolia Avenue in Santee. There will be door prizes, local VIPs, fitness demos, a bike rodeo, food you, and fun family activities at this free event. Day 2 will feature a community safety fair put on by the Santee Fire Department, with tours of emergency vehicles and kids' activities, a huge Zumba class by Crunch Fitness, Food You with healthy cooking demos and snack tasting, Bicycle Rodeo, which is sponsored by the San Diego Sheriff's Department, as October is Crime Prevention Month. And then they will have dance and martial arts performances, therapeutic laughing class, fitness events, and more. Al Bar Shrine will be holding an all-day cook-off with entertainment called Rising from the Ashes on Saturday, October 19th at the Al Bar Shrine Center on Kearney Mesa Road. The event is a fundraiser to rebuild their Mount Laguna Shrine Camp, which burned this past summer in the fire on Mount Laguna. Once in a Blue Moon is the name for the 7th annual gala dinner and auction, held on Sunday, October 20th from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. For the first time, the event will be held off-site in El Monte Valley at the Hazy Meadows Ranch Under the Stars, where guests can enjoy live entertainment, a Santa Maria-style barbecue, and both live and silent auctions to help support Lakeside's River Park Conservancy. The Conservancy celebrates and preserves the San Diego River. Funds raised this year will go toward restoration of the San Diego River to improve water quality and flood control, restoration of plant and wildlife habitat, and the creation of new trails along the San Diego River for the East County community of San Diego. Acumba hikers and walkers have planned an easy-to-moderate fall walk hike on Saturday, October 19th, to Border Fence and Rock House. The group will walk from the border fence separating the United States and Mexico from the Acumba Lounge to the Acumba Airport and Old Rock House. The distance is 5 miles round trip. Hikers can meet at 8 a.m. at the Acumba Lounge on Old Highway 80 in Acumba Hot Springs. It is a dog-friendly hike if the dog is on a 6-foot leash. The Mark Jackson Trio will be performing at the Ramona Library on Saturday, October 19th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. as part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase Series. The trio's country music recalls the road and the wide-open places of North America, including long sojourns through the heartland, according to Simeon Flick from the San Diego Troubadour. Also, as part of the San Diego County Acoustic Showcase Series, Sarah Petit will be performing at El Cajon Library on Saturday, October 19th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. The El Cajon Library is located on East Douglas Avenue in El Cajon. Michael Toombs, San Diego News Network, describes Petit's music as a rockin' honky-tonkin' delight rooted in the heartbreak of Petit's lyrics and vocals. A fall festival in Alpine, sponsored by the San Diego Business Associates, takes place this Saturday, October 19th, and will be a fun-filled free admission family day with children's games and a bouncy entertainment, food, silent auction, and local merchants with jewelry, crafts, and more. The festival takes place between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. in the Albertsons parking lot on Alpine Boulevard and benefits the Heights Charter School in Alpine. Part of the festival features a Halloween pet costume contest sponsored by Natural Instincts. Judging starts at 2 p.m. with three grand prizes consisting of doggy daycare, dog training, and grooming. The Campo Depot Museum has announced the 2013 Pumpkin Express in its 10th year at the Great Pumpkin event at the museum. Travel to the Great Pumpkin's Pumpkin Patch and tour the haunted train where kids can pick out and decorate their own pumpkin. The trains are popular and seating is limited, so reservations are required. Trains leave at 10 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 2:30 p.m. The museum at the Campo Depot on State Highway 94 and Forest Gate Road recommends that riders arrive in Campo at least 45 minutes before departure time, especially if they haven't been to Campo before. We are continuing our coverage of local East County pumpkin farms and pumpkin patches this week. The El Cajon Pumpkin Station is located at Westfield Parkway Plaza in El Cajon. The station includes a mini and giant slide, Ferris wheel, play center, kids' helicopter and train rides, a petting zoo, and of course a pumpkin patch. At Bonita Pumpkin Farm, there are farm attractions such as animals, a tractor hay wagon, an 8-foot-high corn maze, picnic area, and pick-your-own pumpkins. They are open daily throughout the entire month of October, Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. They are located on the corner of Sweetwater Road and Bonita Road. Now for a preview of some fun activities that may require planning or ticket purchases. The second annual Haunt Fest in El Cajon will be held on Friday, October 25th from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. and is located at East Main Street and Rhea Avenue in El Cajon. Guests can enjoy live bands, a juried art show, costume contests, a haunted house, carnival rides for the kids, food, and more. Palomar Mountain State Park's third annual Apple Festival takes place on Sunday, October 27th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. There is free admission. Did you know that the park has apple trees planted by homesteading pioneers from over 100 years ago, and they're still producing delicious apples to this day? Guests can come spend the day at the park to enjoy food, music, games, arts, and crafts, all with an apple harvest theme. The HEART, Heart Mural Project of Ramona, along with their generous sponsors, is presenting the first annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival to be held at the historic Amy Strong Castle at Mount Woodson. The festival will be held on November 2nd from noon to 6 p.m. Art, wine, and food enthusiasts may purchase passports to the event by visiting RamonaArtAndWineFest.net. The event features local artists, Ramona wineries, and local chefs, each of which will be located around the castle. Musicians will provide background music as patrons browse the creations of 15 fine artists, sip award-winning wines from 12 wineries, and taste culinary delights from 5 local chefs. The All-American Soapbox Derby Rally Race, sponsored by the La Mesa Kiwanis Club and Drew Ford, will conduct its annual Soapbox Derby Rally Race on Saturday, November 2nd. Youngsters age 7 through 18 will compete in the Double Elimination 3-Division Derby, held on Junior High Drive adjacent to La Mesa Middle School. Highwood Park is the staging area. Heats get underway by 9 or 9:30 a.m. Families with kids from throughout Southern California, Arizona, and Nevada are expected to make the trip. Rally race winners in stock, super stock, and master division cars earn points to help them qualify for the national race held each July in Akron, Ohio. This is the first year for the age limit to be raised to age 18. Plus, local dignitaries will compete in grudge races. La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid will engage a rival politician. Will engage a rival politician in a special grudge race during the November 2nd Rally Race Derby. Arrangements have been made to have a pair of adult-sized soapbox race cars on hand. Derby Director Blake said the adult heats will be run around the noon hour. The Fall Plant Stravaganza, held at the Water Conservation Garden from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, November 2nd, will help San Diegans make the most of the region's fall to spring planting season and save water while doing it. Retailers and growers will sell shrubs, trees, perennials, succulents, and more. This year, visitors can preview a newly constructed exhibit at the garden, the Dorcas E. Butterfly Pavilion, which is scheduled to come alive with butterflies in early spring 2014. Team Butterfly will be on hand to answer the public's questions about how to create a butterfly garden. And the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, located near the garden, features organic produce and specialty food booths and will be open during the Fall Plant Stravaganza. Plus, visitors can pick up holiday gifts in the garden's gift shop. Workshops and all activities throughout the day are included with admission unless specified, and parking is free. The Heritage of the Americas Museum, a close neighbor to the garden, invites guests to its annual Museum Roadshow on Saturday, October 26th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Their Museum Roadshow is an opportunity to bring in a treasure and have Craig Helm, a certified appraiser and authenticator, tell you what he knows about it and how much it may be worth. Craig specializes in Native American and pre-Columbian artifacts, antique pictures, Western memorabilia, and Asian artifacts. He does not identify nor appraise gems and minerals, coins, or stamps, and do not bring any guns onto the campus for appraisal. You can call the museum for more information and check their website at www.cuyamaca.edu/museum. The Heritage of the Americas Museum is located on the campus of Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. All of these activities and more can be found in our Festivals and Events section and on our calendar at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and I'm here today with Larry Poole. Larry is a professional horseman who lives right here in San Diego's East County. He's also an actor, a stuntman, a movie wrangler, and a trail boss with the Hole in the Wall gang. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thanks for having me, Miriam.
Now, you have been involved in so many different things, it's hard to know where even to start, but I understand that some of the movies you've been involved in were filmed right here in East County, so let's start there. Tell us about a Sierra Nevada gunfight.
We filmed that out in Descanso on Boulder Creek at the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Very famous landmark out here over by the Three Sisters Falls.
Beautiful location, and we were able to film with some A-list Hollywood stars, Michael Madsen, John Savage, Kirk Harris.
Without giving anything away, what's the movie about?
It's set in the 1870s gold rush of Southern California, right after the Civil War. It's about a Civil War veteran who, with his son, comes to Southern California to hunt for gold.
And what did you do in the movie?
I supplied the horses and did some of the stunt riding.
Oh, my goodness. Stunt riding, I guess, is a pretty exciting field. How on earth did you get involved in that?
Been riding horses since I was a young child and was able to pull off some great scenes with crossing the rivers and made some good horses to put the actors on. Just had a great time.
Very good. Did you ever get hurt doing that?
Couple of times.
Couple times. So what are some of the other stunts you've done in the movies?
You know, anything from getting attacked by zombies to crossing Death Valley in a covered wagon to swimming horses across rivers.
Wow. And I saw a photo there of you standing on horseback even, so you've got a lot of acrobatic skills must take to do that. Who are some of the celebrities, the movie stars that you've been in pictures with?
Danny Trejo, the star of the movie Heat. John Savage from the movie The Godfather and Deer Hunter. Michael Madsen from all the Quentin Tarantino movies. Mark Boone from A Sons of Anarchy.
I think there's a Star Trek actor as well.
Tuvok from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
So you must have quite the family photo album there. Is the genre of Western movies making a comeback?
I hear it's the biggest selling genre of all the American films overseas. They love American cowboys overseas, and we hope to see Westerns make a comeback.
Interesting. Well, that would certainly bode well for the Western settings that we have across East County, including the ranch where I met you out there in Descanso, the Buckle Ranch. They had some really interesting buildings that I guess were just recently constructed. Everything from a blacksmith shop to a barn looked like a movie setting. What are some of the other settings that you've filmed on location at besides the San Diego area?
Well, we've filmed at Paramount Ranch Movie Studios. We've filmed at Melody Ranch, Gene Autry Studio. And we filmed on location in Death Valley, San Bernardino, Ventura County, where they filmed Little House on the Prairie. We filmed in Borrego.
So what's next? Do you have anything else coming up?
Possibly have one coming up in November up in L.A. We'll be filming a Western.
Now, another movie coming out, I understand, is called Mountain Duel that was also filmed out here. Can you tell us a little bit about that movie?
How was that? Was actually filmed in Descanso also. Great movie. It's in the post-production phase right now.
And what era is that set in? Can you tell us a little about the plot?
That's a Bigfoot movie.
Bigfoot. So we've got Bigfoot right out here in East County, at least on the silver screen.
And you'll see some great San Diego footage in that movie also. It just, this area translates so well onto film. It's just a beautiful area to work.
Fascinating. I understand they're looking for distributors, so watch for that one soon, too. What are some of the other things that you've been in, TV, movie?
We, earlier this year, filmed Quick Draw up at Paramount Ranch. That's showing on Hulu right now. It's original programming for Hulu. That's the new media.
Very interesting. And Rise of the Lone Star Ranger, I think, is another recent film you had some involvement with.
That was filmed at Paramount Ranch up in Hollywood, starring Danny Trejo and Jason Patric.
Now, you also participated in a pretty big ride recently, I understand. Tell me about that.
Had the honor of riding with Gene Glasscock, the Long Rider.
And how long was the ride?
The ride went for 3 years, from San Diego to Jekyll Island, Georgia, and back to San Diego.
My goodness. And it was a mule-drawn covered wagon, I understand. What portion of that did you go along on?
We crossed California twice, from San Diego to Yuma and back.
Kind of like in Death Valley Days.
Kind of like in Death Valley Days.
There you go. Now, you have a trail ride coming up, I understand, with the Hole in the Wall Gang, which is a Western reenactment and riding group out here.
We have an annual ride that culminates yearly in Borrego Springs for the Borrego Desert Days Festival. That will be finishing on October the 26th.
And when does it start and where? It
starts the weekend before. It's a week-long ride, heading north on the Pacific Crest Trail to the Warner Springs area, and then veering east is the way we normally do it, and we ride into Borrego Springs and kick off their Desert Days Festival.
Very interesting. So the public is certainly invited to that, and they can come see you at that particular event.
They can see us at the Borrego Days Parade on October the 26th.
Now, your group has been around since about 1940, I understand, the Hole in the Wall Gang. How did it all start?
We were started by returning World War II veterans that had a love of horses and horsemanship. They started a nonprofit benefiting local charities that have horse interests. We currently turn a lot of money to the Magic Horse. That's one of our favorite charities off of El Monte Road.
I'm familiar with them. They do amazing work out there helping disabled children with a therapy program on horseback, and it helps them improve their coordination, and some very good people out there.
I've seen it for myself, the wonderful things they do, and it's just amazing to see how a horse can reach into the closed-off mind of an autistic child and open them up. And I've been told that nothing else worked, and yet that small child that had severe disabilities just seems like a normal child to me. We've dealt with horsemanship for the handicapped in the past and a number of other organizations, but usually it's for the children, although lately we've been getting more involved with the Wounded Warrior Foundation.
Yeah, and full disclosure here, the Hole in the Wall Gang was one of the Western reenactment groups that also donated their time at our recent benefit for our nonprofit, East County Magazine, and our wildfire alerts out in Descanso, and I know that everyone enjoyed the show there. You've got another event, I think, coming up in the spring with a different group you're involved in. Can you give us some information about that?
In April, we're going to be appearing at the Night of the Horse in Del Mar.
Mm-hmm. And what is the Night of the Horse?
Night of the Horse is a yearly event centered around the Del Mar National Horse Show.
A lot of East County people involved in that, I imagine. Lots of horses out here.
I understand they're signing up the Victorian Roses Ladies Riding Society, and we've got some Hollywood acts coming down. Professional horsemen from around the country are going to be involved.
You've worked in a lot of movies, a lot of Hollywood celebrities, and a lot of different things, I'm sure, that go on the set. What's it like working there on the set, and do you have any particular memories that stand out in your mind about your movie career?
Well, you know, it's harder work than I ever gave it credit for. Long days, typically 16 to 18 hours, very tiring. And a lot of fun.
Well, it must be great to be living out the dream, so to speak, really doing something that a lot of people probably only dream about and that you and the others involved in this get to do.
I feel very fortunate to be involved. Met a lot of great friends. The folks I've worked with in Hollywood have all been fine, upstanding people. I've enjoyed meeting all of them and working with all of them.
Now, where can people get more information, Larry, if they want to find out about the Hole in the Wall Gang or about some of these movies? Is there a website you can suggest?
course, you can always Google Night of the Horse Del Mar.
Mm-hmm.
And Hole in the Wall Gang Lakeside.
There you go. And the movie that's coming out, that's on the shelves now, is Sierra Nevada Gunfight, if you want to see some local scenery filmed right here in Descanso. Very good. Is there anything else, Larry, that I didn't ask about that you can think of that would be interesting that we should talk about?
Well, I think we've covered everything that I felt like I had to get off my chest this morning, Miriam. Thank you very much, Miriam. It's been a pleasure.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for joining us on 89.1 FM Descanso.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing mystery and suspense author Terry Ambrose. My guest also writes three columns for Examiner.com, one about fiction in San Diego, another on crime fiction in the United States, and a third titled Crime and Courts. Welcome, Terry. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks, Raina. It's great to be here.
Let's start with your background. With a BA in anthropology and an MBA in business management, how did you end up writing fiction about skip tracers, con artists, and criminologists?
It actually goes back to when it was my first job that I got that kind of got me interested in this. I learned that on that job, it was with a finance company, I learned that people lie under almost, well, if they have the right set of circumstances,
right,
they will definitely lie to you.
Right.
And it was my first real experience with that. So that behavior has fascinated me ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, I've learned more about how people communicate and how they, the things that they do when they lie. And so human motivation and that sort of thing has always been of interest to me. So when I started writing mysteries and suspense, that was what intrigued me.
And so do you always have an element of that in what you write?
Yes, I do. My books always have a con artist and an element of lying or a scam involved in there.
And have you read up on the psychology of lying in these characters that you have?
Actually, yes. And what I've also read about is called neuro-linguistic programming. It's the process of how people communicate. It's their eye movements, their facial movements, their breathing patterns. All of that can be read by somebody who really knows what they're doing. Good poker players know how to do that.
Right.
Liars who are really good at it, con men, they know how to read their mark, and they know how to read not necessarily what your thoughts are, but what your reaction is to what they have just said.
So your characters can be authentic.
Yes. And I have them on both sides of the fence, especially in License to Lie. I've got the con artist point of view as well as the criminologist point of view. So you get two sides of the same issue going on.
Oh, fun. So you've called your first novel a trunk novel, meaning that it's a book that should be tossed into a trunk or kept in an attic or basement. Can you tell us about how you evolved from that trunk novel, you know, your first attempt at the writing craft, to your current books and columns?
My first book was sort of a regurgitation of almost every bit of anger that I had running around in me at the time. So when I finished that and I started reading back through it, and I actually started getting critiques on it from a group that I was involved with, I learned it was really bad. It had bad dialogue, it had bad exposition. Everything about it was just terrible. But I had purged myself of all of that anger in the process of writing it. So I knew what I wanted to do was to learn more about the craft. So at that point, what I started doing was getting serious about the craft of writing and learning more about it. So 25 years later, I'm now what I would consider a pretty decent author. I'm getting a lot of 5-star reviews. So I think I pulled it off.
So would you recommend that first-time authors just sort of let go and just put it all out there and go through this process, or?
Yeah, in a sense, because the conventional wisdom is that you really don't get good until you've written about somewhere between 5 and 7 books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually, I think Photo Finish was actually my 4th or 5th book. License to Lie was my 6th. And so I'm now working on books 7 and 8. And I'm feeling now mm-hmm. like I have a much better understanding of the elements of a mystery, the elements of suspense, than I ever did 25 years ago when I thought I knew it, but really didn't.
Right. It's one of those careers you get better as you get older, right?
You definitely get better the more you do it.
Your suspense novel, License to Lie, it's about a con artist and a criminologist who join forces to solve a kidnapping. So in writing that book, what was it like for you to revisit this world where no one can be trusted? Did you re-experience it, or?
When I first started working on License to Lie, I wanted to learn the difference between the way that men look at things and women look at things. I had seen that in something that my wife and I were looking at opposite sides of the same question. It also became apparent that people who are on one side of the law look at it differently than people on the other side of the law. So I started putting that together and came up with this book where we have the con artist trying to accomplish one thing, the criminologist trying to accomplish the same thing, but they're coming at it from different viewpoints. And they might necessarily want the opposite thing, but they had to work together. So that was how I got involved with License to Lie. And it became one of those things that the more I worked on it, the more fun I had with it. And so I really enjoyed being able to look at the same question from 2 points of view that were directly opposed.
Being a psychologist for your characters.
Yeah, in a sense.
One last question, Terry. What book are you working on now, and when will it become available?
I'm working on a book called Kauai Temptations right now. It's the same protagonist that's in Photo Finish, which is a funny Hawaiian mystery, and it's set on the island of Kauai. That will be available sometime in September if all goes well.
Can you tell us a little bit what it's about?
It's about a former skip tracer whose identity is stolen when his checks are stolen. He goes to Kauai to find the person who's been passing the checks. He finds out that it's a young woman who's been impersonating him. And yeah, and she's pulled this off because she has a fake ID and she has his checks with just his first initial. He soon learns that she's been killed. He's got an identity theft ring leader after him, and he's now embroiled in another murder investigation.
Sounds interesting. Well, Terry, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us. For more information on Terry Ambrose, please visit his website at terryambrose.com or his author Facebook page. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Thanks, Raina.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.